Going Linux, episode 462, listener feedback.
No viruses, no fuss, just simple and clean. Going Linux, it's the ultimate dream. Forget the crashes and the constant lag with open source. You're never gonna sag.
Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want to send us feedback, you can email us at goinglinux@gmail.com, or you can send us a voicemail on your phone by dialing the keypad 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Welcome back, Bill.
Yeah, finally back. Oh, well. The work project took longer than anybody had anticipated, and so since it was my idea, I kind of got voluntold that I was going to see it through, and so it's finally through. I don't have to do it no more. I don't have to work 7 days a week. I did that, so I didn't have to, but it was expected. So anyway, all good. All good. So I'm back, thank goodness. And so I guess I got my unofficial vacation.
Yeah, well, your vacation is ending with snow.
Yeah, in November. Lots of snow. did you know, I should probably have a four-wheel drive now. I'm going to have to start looking for something, because the front-wheel drive car doesn't do good with 2 feet of snow. Who would have thought?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. But who would have thought that in New Mexico you would have 2 feet of snow?
Live in the desert, they say. Nothing could go wrong, they say. What could? Yeah.
Well, you survived the snow. You didn't throw your back into convulsions shoveling the snow. And you didn't starve trying to get through the snow to the store to get provisions. So you've just got to wait till it melts, I guess.
Yeah. It was fine. I used the time to spend some time with the two dogs and stay warm and test a bunch of Linux stuff that I haven't been able to do, except because it's been work, go to bed, get up, and go back to work. So I got to play for a few days.
Now I'm going to ask you what distributions you were playing around with. But before I do that, what I've been doing in the interim, obviously we haven't been recording podcast episodes, but I have been editing all the ones that we had ready to edit, and they're all released. So we're recording this one, and as soon as it's edited, it's going out. And we'll catch up again. But in the meantime, I've been writing some articles for our website, and I have been converting our website into a new format. So if you go to goinglinux.com, you'll notice a brand new design. So I had to change. I had been considering Hugo and a number of other things, but in the end, I decided on something called Publii. It's got two I's at the end, Publii, as the software to use for generating the static code. And you can tell by the design that it is very modern. It is responsive for mobile phones. I tested it out thoroughly before, you know, publishing it. Made a few tweaks to the way that the standard out-of-the-box theme, which is what I'm using, laid things out, and added a few tweaks of my own. And here we are. We've got a brand new website. I've been converting some of the old articles that we've had, and I haven't done too much to convert the old episodes. As you probably know, in the time that we've not been recording, the Internet Archive, which is where we host our episodes, has been attacked and went offline for quite a long time. So I thought, okay, well, since I'm redoing the website anyway, let's host some of these episode, the files on the server for our website. I've certainly got the space to do that.
Yeah.
And so I've got the last 50 or so, last couple of years worth, I guess, hosted on our site, and the rest I've actually linked to the episodes that are in the Internet Archive. But they finally got the Internet Archive back up. It's in read-only mode as we record this.
Yeah, I think it also, there's a few other podcasts that use Internet Archive. I think Minkcast was saying that they were affected pretty drastically too. So I think they were figuring out what to do. But so still got the Nix OS running on my old laptop, still playing with it. It's still running good. It's like its 13th generation, so that means I've upgraded it and changed things, and it just keeps track. So I've had that for a while, and it's been working well. I've been playing with one called Big Linux, and it's based on Arch. Actually, it's based on Manjaro, which is based on Arch, but it's a Brazilian, and it has English, and it works really well. And I'm recording it right now, and I've been running that for almost the entire time that I haven't been able to record, just because I didn't have time to goof off. But I've tried some of the other Ubuntu. I've tried the updated Zorin. I tried MX Linux, which is based on Debian, which it turned out it ran really well. I enjoyed that for a little while. But I've been having issues with Ubuntu based, and I don't know why. None of the other distros that I've tried, Bazite, Silverblue, which are Fedora based, or Arch, regular Arch, Manjaro, or Big Linux, none of them have any issues. I've been hearing how great OpenSUSE was, and that was one of my very first ones I tried. So I went ahead and just put that on my machine, just because I have everything backed up, so I can restore very quickly. And was not impressed, but it did run just fine. But I don't know what it is, but I'm getting issues with just installer crashes and poor gaming performance. I'm running Starfield, which is a fairly new AAA game by Bethesda, on this on my machine, and I'm getting close to 90 frames according to what it's reading, and it's just buttery smooth, so I'm very happy with it. Other than that, I've just been playing with Nix and playing with Arch-based distros, and just I had to have some tech time because I hadn't had any.
Yeah, it's strange that we've. Hang on a second. I'm recording on the wrong mic. Okay, I will switch mics here.
Okay.
There. So hopefully this works. Okay, so it's strange that you have had problems with the Ubuntu-based, and although we've talked about this before we started recording, let me just say that I have been running a number of Ubuntu-based distributions, Ubuntu Mate, Ubuntu Cinnamon, and those two on hardware, and then Pop! OS and Mint, Linux Mint, on virtual machines. And not a problem with 2404 version of all of those. I have also a Linux Mint 2204 that I upgraded, and every once in a while, the installation on the virtual machine, the distribution itself, will crash something that I have to acknowledge. I haven't really investigated it because you just say, okay, ignore and move on, and it continues to work. So I don't know what's going on there, but it only happens in that one virtual machine. So I don't know what it would be. It's certainly not something that I've experienced.
Well, I do need to qualify that. Now, Linux Mint had no issues at all. It ran perfect. So, I mean, the only thing that I can, and I'm just spitballing and please don't flame me, is on Linux Mint and MX Linux, which I know is based on Debian, they use Flatpaks.
Yeah.
And it seems like the more that the snaps are used in Ubuntu, the more issues I have. And I don't know if it's as a hardware. I'm not saying it is the problem. I'm just I'm looking for a common denominator. When it's a flat pack based, I don't have any issues, but that I can think of. And a lot of times I'll have to go with like a native. Like, you don't want to use the Steam Snap. It's just garbage. It is. The Flatpak is better, but the native, the Flatpak works perfectly, but the Snap can't find like my other storage drive where where a lot of the bigger games are. But as soon as I put a Flatpak on it, it works perfectly, and it also works perfectly on the native, on the Debian Steam package.
You know, that's interesting. I use a mix of Debian packages, the native Deb packages, a couple of app images. I've kind of gotten away from those. I've got whatever the default snap packages are, but I haven't added anything as a snap package, and I've been moving more and more to Flatpaks or Debian packages whenever I can. And just one more data point to add to your analysis. I haven't seen the problems, but I'm using mostly Flatpaks and Deb packages, so I haven't been using the snaps. Maybe that's the cause, but one data point doesn't make a trend.
Well, actually, that makes a lot of sense, Larry. I got two things I want to add before we move on. Since I'm running an Arch-based system, all of these are built, they're native. There is no Flatpaks or snaps. It's just built from their build scripts. No issues at all. And when I was testing out Zorin, their 17.2 Pro, it has where you can use Flatpaks and snaps. They're all enabled. And I had issues with the snaps, but I didn't have, because certain of their programs are native, certain programs are snaps, and certain are Flatpaks. I always seem to have problems with the snaps. Now, I don't know if it's just growing pains or whatever, but it's an interesting data point. If you start looking at, because I don't have any issues with the Arch-based system at all. I didn't have any. And when I was using Bazite, which uses just Flatpaks because it's an immutable system, didn't have any issues. So I don't know what it is. Maybe it's probably growing pains I'm just trying to decide whether it's a hardware or a software. So if anybody knows, let me know. But I do know that the Snap Steam is junk. Don't use it.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
All right. Enough of that. Sorry. So, should we probably record some of this?
Yeah, I think we should. We've got a lot of listener feedback, as you can imagine, in the time we've been unable to record. A lot of things have gone on, so we've got a lot of feedback, including a few recorded messages, voicemails, and so on from our listeners. And we had an announcement for Call for Papers for Scale 22, the Southern California Linux Expo, that at the time I wrote this episode was still in process, but that has actually closed, so you can't submit any new papers, but we can talk about the registration.
Okay. Scale 22. Registration is now open. The Scale team is pleased to announce that the 22nd Annual Southern California Linux Expo Scale 22X will be held on March 6th through the 9th, 2025 at the Pasadena Convention Center in Pasadena, California, near Los Angeles. Registration is now open. Visit their website to snag tickets at the best price. Early bird pricing will not last long, and the link is in the show notes. This is a nonprofit event and would not be possible without the help of their volunteers and organizers and the generous funding support provided by the sponsors. If you wish to sponsor or exhibit at Scale, please email sponsorship@socallinuxexpo.org for more details. We look forward to seeing you in Pasadena, the Scale team.
Okay, and the Going Linux website is not affiliated with the Scale operation in any way, and is not sponsored by Scale. And unfortunately, I won't be able to attend this year for reasons. So,
didn't you present
have fun
at Scale?
If you go. Oh, yeah, a long time ago. Oh, okay. I presented in two different scales.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, that was a long time ago. I'd like to get back, and unfortunately, once again, life has gotten in the way of the things I would love to be able to do.
We need to stop.
Stop life? No, I don't think so, yeah.
No, just stop interfering.
Oh, I see. Okay, all right, fine. All right, let's move on to our voicemails.
Okay.
We have two recorded voicemails that I will edit down to one from Sean, and let's listen to him.
Aloha from Utah, from your number one pedantic minion. Hello, top billing and bottom billing. Hey, you two guys, it's up to you to decide who's top billing and bottom billing. This way, it's all, like, democratic or whatever, right? Anyways, Larry and Bill, this is your number one pedantic and apparently rambling minion, Sean NZ17 Robinson. I listened to your past recent episodes until episode number 458, and I had some feedback to provide to you guys. First of all, thanks for playing all of my recent voicemail as an Ogg Vorbis file sent via email to you guys. It sounded good, and I appreciate it. By the way, let's talk about the theme song. I think your fresh theme song is mighty good, and I enjoyed listening to it. A lot of people have been saying that they don't like the theme song. However, I think that it sounds really good. And it's, well, not only fresh as in recent, it's fresh as in a fresh change of pace from having the good old theme song. And hey, if people don't like it, they can always just cut out the theme song and paste in the old theme song. And, I mean, you know, it's all sitting there, you know. Mark Blasco themes and everything, they can just get it from his website or one of the old episodes and paste it right on the beginning and end of the show. I do have a qualm, though. Part of the lyrics for the new song say, no viruses. And I mean, okay, so there's less viruses for Linux than there are for Windows or Mac. And definitely, you know, even Android and iOS still have some viruses. So, I mean, I guess I can just chalk it up to hyperbole. You know, it's exaggeration for the purposes of effect. Yes, there are Linux viruses, however, you're a lot less likely to get one than with some other OSs, right? Anyways, good theme song. So good, in fact, that I think that you guys should make the theme song available for download from the Going Linux website. After all, it sounds good, it's a nice theme song, and I think people would appreciate being able to download it as an MP3 or Ogg Vorbis file. That's my opinion anyway. What do you fellow minions and gremlins and goblins and hosts and listeners think? I think, let the guys know over at the Going Linux community. Anyway, what else? All right. Recently, as of the recording of this listener feedback anyways, we had Software Freedom Day. And, Software Freedom Day is an awesome holiday that I think everyone should participate in, particularly those who run Linux and free Libre open source software, hardware, media, or content podcasts or websites that are proponents of such. After all, Software Freedom Day is a day for us to celebrate all of the goodness that has been brought to us by the open source community, including those people that make things such as, the content on Wikipedia, as well as the software that powers Wikipedia, or the VLC media player, or Linux, or Mozilla Firefox, or all of those other pieces of software we depend upon. Like, I like to use the AXIT audio recorder software for Linux, which is free Libre open source software that I use when recording the listener feedback that I send to the Going Linux website. Anyway, the Software Freedom Day actually started, 10, 15 years ago. And then around 2011 or so, sort of reached the height of its popularity, perhaps 2014. But these days, with so much software being digitally distributed, the old days when we would burn CDRs loaded up with free software with custom labels and CD jewel cases and hand them out to people, there's something of a thing of the past now that most computers don't even have CD or DVD optical disk drives to read and install that software from. And naturally, software is constantly getting upgrades so that the old stuff is, people often just say, I'll download it. And so things have changed. So Software Freedom Day hasn't had as many people celebrating it as it used to. Although I have to say, certain websites have been trying to promote Software Freedom Day. And there's even been a few Software Freedom Day songs that you can find at various websites like YouTube and the like. And they're pretty good and worth a download. And most or all of the ones I know of have been written by humans and performed by humans. So if anyone has any prejudices against artificial intelligence is writing any computer-generated music versus human-generated music, listen to the Software Freedom Day songs and enjoy the music created by your fellow humans. As a matter of fact, this year, from what I remember, System 76 of Denver, Colorado, had a great big Software Freedom Day party to try to rejuvenate the popularity of Software Freedom Day, and they were not just having a big party, they were giving away all sorts of things that they had planned to give as gifts for Software Freedom Day attendees. I wish I could have been there, but, Denver is about a five-hour drive away from here, so that seemed like a little too much. Let's see, what else do I got for you guys? All right, so here's a software recommendation for you. YTDLP. This was based upon, it's a fork of YTDL, or, if you will, the YouTube download. It was a project for downloading, as the name suggests, videos from YouTube. However, it could also be used to download audio from YouTube, and it was a really good piece of software. I believe that the software was actually YouTube-DL. However, as with so many other projects out there, eventually the creators, they stopped upgrading their software. Perhaps they lost interest, or life got in the way, or health problems, or whatever it is. The YouTube DL source code was taken, and being open source was turned into YTDLP. And not only has this continued their work, and maintain compatibility with YouTube so that you can download audio and video from YouTube for listening offline or for whatever purposes. The software actually supports over 111 different websites and services, so you can also download audio and video from places like Dailymotion and Vimeo and I think SoundCloud. I think you can also get things from NHK World Japan, Crunchyroll. There's a lot of websites and far too many to list here. So you can see their README file or other documentation at the YTDLP website. Very good software. Another software that I'd like to recommend is GRAMPS, G-R-A-M-P-S. This is genealogy software for people to track their family history and family tree with, so that you can track your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, as many generations up or down in history as you please, and you can track all sorts of records. It's very, very featureful and even includes additional features that specific religions might use in addition to standard genealogy records. It's really good software, and I started to use it a few years ago for tracking information about my own family tree. So I definitely recommend people give that a try. As a matter of fact, that just made me think of a lot of really good open source software that I've used for astronomy purposes. There's different ones, and I don't have their name right here in front of me right now. However, it's desktop Linux software, and I think it's called something like Celestia or Night Sky or Night View or whatever. If you go to sourceforge.net and you check the astronomy section, you can find a lot of good software, including some good Linux desktop software that lets you look at the night sky from anywhere on Earth, and some of them even let you zoom around in 3D space to different moons and planets of our solar system and beyond. Really good software. And some of the software that's been featured for Software Freedom Day, like the vector graphics and painting programs like Inkscape and SODIPODI. S-O-D-I-P-O-D-I for SODIPODI. And Inkscape is I-N-K-S-E-A-P-E. Anyway, let's not make this too long with too many software recommendations. So back during episode 458, when you were playing some of my podcast feedback, I was talking about this terminal weather widget or applet that I was using that supported color. And at the time, I couldn't get that information for you because my computer was having hardware problems. Well, I'm still figuring that out and hope to fix that. But it's been on the back burner because of the terribly high temperatures I experienced this summer and other reasons. So, haven't totally fixed the computer, but I was able to get some of my files transferred from the computer, copying them to USB and microSD cards and the like. Anyway, while I was at it, I wanted to also get you the name of that weather applet, in case any of the listeners or you guys wanted to try it out. And that software is called ANSI Weather. You know, the initialism, A-N-S-I. Well, actually, A-N-S-I is the initialism. It's an abbreviation or acronym, ANSI, which is a good old graphics standard and therefore the inspiration for the name of the software. So if you're looking for this terminal weather widget, which you can supply just about any city, at least in the United States, might be globally worldwide too, it's spelt A-N-S-I-W-E-A-T-H-E-R, ANSI Weather, and naturally is open source software. Alright, so last thing for this listener feedback, which, like most of my listener feedback, has taken more minutes than I thought it would to record, and that is I would like to get people's opinions about the Enlightenment graphical user interface, or desktop environment. It's funny because back when I was first made aware of Enlightenment, it was 20 years ago or more, and people were talking about how heavy the software was and how demanding it was on your computers, and, well, you know, this was 20-something years ago, so a lot of people were using integrated graphics that were using their main memory, their RAM, as video memory, chopping off, you know, 4 or 8 megabytes of video memory from the system memory itself, which is neither fast nor ideal. So people complaining about how slow Enlightenment was, you know, somewhat justified back then, but man, with 20 years or more of hardware advancements, Enlightenment seems to run like greased lightning compared to today's commercial operating systems and how slow they can be, or even some of the heavier open source desktop environments. Nonetheless, I would like to hear the opinions of Larry, Bill, and any listeners, minions, gremlins, goblins, or mythological creatures listening to this episode about what they think about Enlightenment. Really good project, in my opinion. Very nice visually. And light on resources compared to today's hardware and software standards. All right, well, I guess that's about all for this recording. So, from your number one pedantic and rambling minion, Sean NZ17 Robinson, aloha from Utah. Postscript, I remembered the name of one of those other astronomy softwares. It is Stellarium. Stellarium is really good software and multi-platform from what I remember. So go to the Stellarium website and give that a try if you guys like astronomy or just seeing cool graphics. All right, bye from NZ17.
Okay, thanks, Sean. And yeah, thanks for the software recommendations and the comments on the theme song. I have to look at the licensing information on that theme song. Since it was generated using AI, there are some terms of use, I guess. It's probably a better way to talk about it than licensing, but terms of use. I think there might be a way to put a link to the site where it was generated, and then you can download it from there. So I don't think I can actually just put the file on our website. That would be very convenient. But let me see what I can do about providing the whole thing to you. Okay. Let's see. YTDLP.
That's a YouTube downloader.
Yes. And I've used a few of them.
The one that worked the best was YouTube-DL. I think this is the successor to it. And he was right about what he said in his voicemail, was that for a while it worked really, really well, but you know, as I think the developers got tired, and when they picked it up, they made YTDLP. I haven't used that. I used to use the YouTube.DL because I would find a YouTube I wanted to share, a video I wanted to share with somebody, and I'd use that to download it so I could say, hey, look, and put it on my phone, or say, look at this, or send it to them. So,
yeah, I've used a lot of those as well. And the one that has a Debian package, I think, but it certainly has a Flatpak, that rather than command line, is a graphical, and that's something called Parabolic. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes, but it is a YouTube downloader that allows you to download media from YouTube and other sites. And it works pretty well. And when I'm in a graphical user interface mood, I'll use that. If not, I'll use one of the YouTube command line versions of YouTube downloaders. So, yeah, used a bunch of those. So, again, thanks for that suggestion, Sean. Gramps, I've heard of that for genealogy and tracking history and stuff. I haven't used it. Have you?
No, I've heard of Gramps, but I had forgotten about it. I don't know who develops it anymore. I mean, I remember hearing about it, and I remember looking at it probably way back in the day. But, you know, I have a hard time remembering what I had for breakfast sometimes. So, no, seriously, I couldn't recall using it actively, but it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
I wonder where it does pull its information from. I mean, whether what resources I'd like to, I'm going to have to do some research and look at it. I'd like to see where you can get, you know, get information or how you would import information into GRAMPS. So,
yeah, I hadn't even thought of that it would interface with or connect to some of the genealogy sites. I was thinking that you would have to enter all the information in yourself. I don't know which way it works since I haven't tried it, but be interesting to find out. Yeah.
I'll have to make a note.
Yeah, exactly. Making a note is the only way we can remember this stuff. So much stuff. Speaking of so much stuff, astronomy software Stellarium. I think I looked at that a while ago. I'm not an astronomer, and, you know, I have a passing interest in astronomy, but not enough to spend a lot of time looking for or using that software. Even though you kind of tempted me with your visit to the large, I forget what it was called, the large array. Yeah, the
very large array, VLA.
Yeah, there you go, VLA. There in New Mexico.
I still got sent to your patch.
I forgot about that too.
I have used Stellarium, and it's fantastic.
Is it really? Okay.
It is. It, you can watch it. You can have it where it moves by itself and with the time, put it different places in the world. It's really, really cool. So if it's snowing, you can actually be in there looking at the night sky. It's fantastic. It was really good software.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, I'm not doing a lot of graphics. So did PuTTY and Inkscape. Although I have Inkscape installed, I've only played around with it. They really are not software packages that I'm familiar with. How about you?
So, I don't play around with a lot of it. I have heard of Inkscape. I've opened it up, looked at it, and said, nope.
You have to be a graphic artist, I guess, to really appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely not a graphic artist. So, I mean, I have a hard time, just enough recording stuff sometimes, so no.
Okay. We'll wait for some feedback from our listeners on those two.
Yeah, and if you think Inkscape, I think it does the, what, the SVG graphics?
Yeah.
But just on the same lines, I had opened up Blender, looked at it and went, oh, heck no.
Even worse.
Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So I was going to move on to the weather widget, ANSI Weather, something that I presumed was available, but had never really investigated. And, you know, Sean in a previous episode had mentioned some weather widgets for the desktop, and Jack Death in a future feedback here on this episode will talk about one for the GNOME or Cinnamon desktop, rather. So we'll just kind of, unless you have a comment on that, we'll just kind of leave that until we discuss it in Jack Death's comment.
Nope, nothing to say because I haven't used it. I just look out the window and say, yep, it's snowing, and keep on going.
Yeah, surprise. anyhow, and last but not least, he asks for feedback from our listeners on Enlightenment, looking for opinions on using it. He didn't get into too many specifics as to what he wanted to hear, so let's just kind of open it up to everybody. Just general overview. What do you like? What don't you like? How's it compared with some other desktop environments or window managers that you've been using? And let's leave it at that. I haven't used Enlightenment. How about you,
Bill? Of course, you know I would have.
Yes, of course.
I haven't used it in a while. Bodhi Linux uses Enlightenment. I haven't looked at it recently. First time I looked at it, it was okay. It was a little, I would say wonky or a little clunky. Enlightenment, I'm sure, has come a long way. I'll have to look at it. Again, I know Moss from the Linux Mint podcast. He likes Enlightenment quite a bit. But I remember looking at it. I don't remember it making me go, ooh, got to run this. But I'll look at it again. I'm sure they've made it. That's been years. So I'll look at it, and maybe I'll do a quick mini review of the Enlightenment, or we'll do a show on the different desktops that aren't normally used.
And maybe we can incorporate some of the feedback from our listeners at that point. Good stuff.
All right. So we got a third voice message, and it come on our voicemail from Gabe from Los Angeles in your neck of the woods, Larry.
Yeah. Let's just listen to Gabe's voicemail.
Okay.
Hey, Larry and Bill. This is Gabe from Los Angeles. Hey, thanks for the podcast and for inspiring me to go Linux. Hey, I just had a question. Wouldn't it make sense for device manufacturers to offer their software in Linux? For example, I tried purchasing a webcam recently, but it doesn't have Linux software, and so you can't take full advantage of the features of the camera. So just wanted to get you guys' take on that. It seems like it would be worth at least one full-time employee to develop software for different devices out there. So take care. Thank you.
Okay, Gabe, thanks. Nice short voicemail. Device drivers for Linux. Why don't device makers make them available?
Because they're putzes. Sorry, was that out loud? That was not diplomatic. I would agree with Gabe. They really should. He was talking about a camera that he couldn't get the drivers to use all its features. I think a lot of that, Larry, it's gotten better. If you remember way back in the day, we were lucky to get a sound card working or a modem. I was listening to you and I couldn't figure out why my Wind modem wouldn't work in Linux.
Yeah. Designed specifically for Windows.
But at the time, you didn't know.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, I heard that from Tom, the old previous co-host, had mentioned it, and it kind of clicked together. But Gabe, believe it or not, it's come a long way, but there's a lot of these vendors or companies, when they develop a product, they've got to protect their patents, or so they think. They don't, because a lot of times to develop an open source driver for certain items, they say would expose their intellectual property for the device. Give you a good example of one is the Asahi project is writing basically the operating system for the M1, 2, and 3, and I think possibly the 4M4 chips in the MacBooks, because they like the hardware, they like the power, but they've had to reverse engineer it because it's all closed. They had to get the sound working, and had to get the software would run, Linux would run on it. So, and they use that's Fedora. So they're doing a lot of good work, but that's just an example. There's a lot of little custom or proprietary things inside the computer or inside a camera or a cell phone that they are trying to protect, because they don't want people to, I guess, figure out what magic sauce it has. I don't know. So
yeah, and it's unfortunate they don't. They just don't, Gabe. Unfortunately, as well, even you know, after decades of using Linux, we're still at a point where before you buy hardware that you intend to run Linux on, you should check compatibility of the components, like the camera, like the sound card, like that kind of thing. So find out what it has on the computer and make sure that it runs fine. And a simple search on Google or DuckDuckGo or whatever your search engine is will let you know if you just search for that model number or that vendor and the word Linux, it'll Linux compatibility is probably a good way to phrase your search. And you can find forums where it's discussed, and even though there may not be any open source drivers for it, you may find a workaround. Oftentimes you will find out that it's already supported in the kernel, in which case go ahead and buy that. And for peripherals, same thing. Logitech is one of the companies that does a really good job of supporting Linux in its product line. And even with that, there are some products that they have where either they're not supported or not all the features are supported in the drivers that are provided in the Linux kernel. And, you know, I have a Logitech webcam where I use it for work, and my work laptop is a Mac. So it has an application that you can use to set resolution and adjust the angle programmatically of the camera. And, you know, you can zoom in, zoom out, that sort of stuff, which even the Mac doesn't support natively. You have to install this additional software. The additional software happens to be from Logitech, so they do support using it on the Mac. And the camera otherwise works just fine, but it also works just fine on Linux, but they don't provide that adjustment software or that control software for Linux. They do provide it for Windows. They do provide it for Mac. So even that still goes on with the best supported Linux-supported hardware manufacturers. For printers, stay away from Canon. HP usually is well-supported for printers.
Brother's pretty good, right?
Brother's pretty good. You have to watch sometimes with the Brother. It may not be supported in the Linux kernel, so you actually have to download a driver. Sometimes they're available in the software repository. Sometimes you have to go to the website. And sometimes they're just not available, or the hardware is just not supported. So with Linux, you have to do your homework before you go buying hardware. And not nearly to the level that you used to do when you and I started using Linux, Bill. So it's come a long, long, long way. A lot of things are supported. But even today, I purchased my new laptop computer knowing that the camera and the audio, the sound card, were not particularly well supported. In fact, even today, a few months after purchasing this computer, the driver for the camera that's in this computer is still not in the Linux kernel, and I still have to use an external webcam. So, I knew that going in. I've been researching the forums and the various posts on how to get it working, and none of them have been successful at this point. So, I've been using Linux for quite a large number of years and went into it knowing that. So that's kind of the attitude you have to have. Either do your research, buy a computer that is pre-installed with Linux, mm-hmm. is the one solution that is guaranteed to give you support. So that would be Linux pre-installed computers like System76 or Tuxedo or what are some of the other ones?
Framework,
yes, another good one. So lots of them out there. And some of the main brands like Dell.
Dell has good ones.
But just make sure that you're looking at all the components on that Dell computer you're about to order. They have some on their website where they are pre-installed with Linux. Lenovo, you have to hunt a lot harder to find the ones in Lenovo, but they have some you can get pre-installed with Linux. It used to be when they were owned by IBM, they were almost always supporting Linux, but now that they've sort of separated from IBM, their support for Linux has been dwindling a little bit. They're still pretty much supporting Linux, but every once in a while I run across a model that should support Linux but doesn't for whatever reason. So those are some off the top of the head suggestions when looking for hardware.
And we're not affiliated with any of those, and we're not getting paid for telling you about System 76 or Tuxedo Computers or Framework or Dell, but they're all good choices if you want a
So do your research. That's the main message.
You remember, Larry, we'd have to walk in with a thumb drive and stick it in there real quick, see if everything would boot up or CD.
Yep. Yeah, a CD. Yeah, put a CD in the machine and make sure.
Yeah, they would look at sometimes they wouldn't like that at all.
Especially today, because that would be a great way to get a virus on a computer that somebody might be buying.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't like it.
They got it all locked down pretty much now.
All right, let's go on to our email. We've got a long list of email we haven't even touched yet.
Okay, sure.
Okay. All right, Jack Death writes with a response to Sean, who wrote in on with a comment on episode 458. Looking for recommendations on weather apps or widgets? I have been using the weather applet that comes with Cinnamon Spices. This allows you to connect to all kinds of different weather servers. Some will ask for an API key. I have been using the Open Weather Map free data service, and using their API key, you can configure all kinds of custom settings in how you want your desktop widget displayed, from just temperature to humidity, barometric pressure, and more. You can even change what icon set is used to display the weather and make it look cool. I prefer vCloud's icon set. And he goes on to say, this is what my desktop widget looks like. He provided us a screenshot. So maybe we can include that in the show notes. Probably on the show notes on the website. It may not show up on your phone if you're listening to this episode on your phone. But we'll see what we can do. He says, I have almost full transparency set so you can see the background through it. I love being able to get up in the morning and see what the weather is going to be at a quick glance without having to browse websites and so forth. I also have a similar weather app on the desktop on my Samsung smartphone. Hope this helps.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty cool. I use the same one. I don't use the same icon set, but I have to say it's very reliable. And I also use the key that they provide, and it's provided for free for that one. There are others that you have to pay for the license key. So I use the free one. It works just fine and gives me the ability to look at weather wherever I am. You just have to do a quick setting change if you're traveling like I am today, not in California, but rather in Texas. So I've got it switched over to the Texas weather and can see quickly without opening the window what the weather is like now, as well as what it's going to be for the rest of the day, the week, the month, all that sort of stuff. So nice. Good stuff.
Yeah, good, good recommendation. So Jack wasn't done. Jack Des shared a new Linux loadout. Oh, let's see what he says. So I just got done putting together what is probably the nicest Dell Octoplex microcomputer loadout we've ever sold.
Okay, so let me just interrupt here to say that Troy, his real name is Troy, Does he say at the bottom of his email here? Yes. He works for Home and Business Computing Services in the Appleton, Wisconsin area, and has wrote in a number of times before. He's one of our regular listeners that's been around a long time, but this is his work. Okay, so let's get into the specs on this computer. Go ahead.
Okay, I want it, by the way.
Yeah, it sounds really nice.
Yeah, so it is a Dell Octoplex 7020 Micro Plus Intel Core 14th Generation i9-14900 processor, 24 cores, up to 5.4 gigahertz. 36 megabyte cache, and it's a 60 watt chip. It has a 1 terabyte PCI M.2 NVMe class 4 solid state drive, 64 gigabytes, up to 560 megahertz DDR5, SODIMM non-ECC, Intel UHD graphics, TP-Link TX20U Nano Wi-Fi 6 USB adapter, has a US keyboard, which is black, a Dell MS 116 optical black mouse, a micro form factor plus with a 65-watt CPU, the power cord's 125 volt, has a 3-year service with on-site services and remote diagnosis.
Yeah, it's got all the latest everything.
Yeah, but you know, one thing it doesn't have the latest and greatest, and Troy, I'm kind of, it doesn't have an NVIDIA card in it. I need it for gaming. Okay, sorry.
Ah, yes, okay, yeah, go ahead.
The customer currently only has a single powerful laptop, and his main program he uses is QuickBooks. However, there are many times his accountant needs to remote into his laptop to work in QuickBooks, but that ties it up so he can't use it and has to leave it home instead of taking it to, on job sites. He also wanted to be able to work in it at the same time as the accountant, and they both wanted to be able to work in it remotely. So, since QuickBooks data cannot be accessed from a cloud storage location, you know, like Google Drive or OneDrive or Dropbox, due to a high chance of data corruption, and must be accessed only on a local network, I suggested that we set up him up with a server of sorts that they both can remote into and work at the same time. He said that was fine, but he didn't want anything that was slow and wanted the experience to be zippy.
This'll be zippy.
Okay. I9. He also had limited space in his office to host another computer. So what I did is set him up with a very powerful Dell microcomputer, which he can put about anywhere on his desk. He has no Ethernet jacks anywhere near where his router is located, so he connects everything wirelessly to a Ubiquiti Dream Machine, and that's basically his router. The main OS is Linux Mint 21.3. Into this, I created 2 VirtualBox virtual machines, each with 250 gigabyte drive space allocated and 16 gigabytes of memory. Each virtual machine is running Windows 10. I was able to use the built-in license key that come with the computer for one VM, but we had to purchase a second license at $200 for the second VM. One VM will be the accounting PC onto which the QuickBooks is installed and will host all the data files. This is the computer the accountant will remote into. The second VM will be the remote PC, which he will remote into with his laptop while he was out of the office. This will enable both of them to remote in and work QuickBooks at the same time using multi-user mode. they will remote in using an open source version of Rust Desk. We host our own Rust Desk server, he writes, here at the shop for supporting our customers. This is almost exactly like TeamViewer, but you don't have to take out a second mortgage to be able to afford it since it's free.
Mm-hmm.
He then writes, I then set up with a Backblaze account to back up the accounting PC data. All in all, this will be about a $2,150 computer, and with a 24-core i9, it is super fast. Using Linux as the host OS will make the system faster and more secure overall, since each VM is technically still a Windows computer. We also installed antivirus and anti-malware software subscriptions for protection, which gives us extra revenue. But this way, we can also take periodic snapshots of at least the accounting VM in addition to the regular Backblaze backups in case we need to roll back due to some critical happening to AVM. So I share this in case there are others who have similar business needs and wish to get creative. Troy, aka Jack Dearth, works for Home and Business Computer Systems in Appleton, Wisconsin area. And he lists, and his website is www.hbcs.com.
Okay. And I don't know whether they ship computers out of Wisconsin or not, but if he does, feel free to look him up. It sounds like they can do a pretty good job.
That's pretty custom.
Yeah, very much so. And despite the lack of an NVIDIA card for gaming, it sounds like this computer probably has enough power that you can use both VMs running Windows, and for somebody sitting in the office, they can probably do gaming as well on Linux. So it is a very nice machine.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So following that, I sent a message back to Troy on some additional feedback on Rust Desk, because I had been playing around with Rust Desk for remote control of a computer in the other room, and that way I don't have to get all the way up out of my chair and walk into the other room to, you know, look at the what's going on in the other computer. So anyway, that's old man voice if you didn't figure that out. As I said, I've been using Rust Desk lately. I've even written a post on our website on how to set up Rust Desk. We've been using TeamViewer as our support tool of choice for our customers, is what Troy said, but they are so damn expensive. I looked at the price of what our renewal was going to be for even a single license and almost choked. There are lots of different remote control tools out there, but none of them have been as user-friendly to use with the kinds of features it offers. Since half of our clients are home users, we also work with a lot of elderly people who call us for help. It would be almost impossible to talk them through, say, installing a VNC server and configuring ports in their router, etc., just to do a quick remote support connection. Also, we cannot consistently use Chrome Remote Desktop since not all our clients necessarily have Google accounts. Windows Quick Assist is out because a lot of our clients use Linux, etc. With TeamViewer, we have a pre-configured client saved on their servers with a URL we have mapped to a subdomain. We just tell them to point their browser to help.hbcs.com, and it will automatically download the client, whether for Windows or Linux, which they just open and then read to us an ID and password. Now we host our own Rust Desk server, and I have pre-configured clients in a GitHub project, so they can go to a package on our website and click on the symbol for their operating system and download the appropriate client that way. They then read us an ID and password, just like TeamViewer. Plus, the features in Rust Desk are almost exactly the same as TeamViewer, with a few exceptions. This way, We can remote into customers immediately when they call and take care of our great many issues without their having to drive all the way to our shop. It saves us a ton of time and them a lot of money. If the call takes more than 15 minutes, we send them a bill. If it's under 15 minutes, we usually just help them for free and call it a day. Troy. Well, thanks for all that feedback on Rustdesk, Troy, and yeah. I agree. Rustdesk is very similar to TeamViewer in the way that it works, and I've been using it for a few months now, and it's been working phenomenally, and we'll include a link not only to what Troy has suggested here and a link to the Rustdesk website so you can read up on it, but Rustdesk is available as a Debian package, and I don't know whether they have a snap or not, but certainly as an app image. And so you can install it yourself quickly and easily if you have the occasion to either control another computer that you have and you just want to do it from another location, because there are other ways to control computers from across the same network, but Rustdesk passes through networks as well. I mean, I mentioned that I'm here in Texas this week, so I can actually run Rustdesk to remote into my Dell computer at home. Obviously, two different networks, and it works perfectly. Works perfectly. So there you go. Thanks, Troy.
I tell you what, Troy's got, has got the stuff this week, doesn't he? Wow.
He certainly does.
So our next email comes from George from Tulsa, and it's in reference to 460 listener feedback about laptop batteries. This one's for Larry and listener Reed. This is until Bill tricks Reed into sending him that snazzy new System 76 Lamer Pro. Yeah, send me that. So, Larry, I listen endlessly as you and Reed raved about the phenomenal battery life on your new laptops. Envious because of the LG Gram 16 I've discussed in a few recent episodes has such dismal battery life. I bought what the YouTube tech gurus rated the top power bank for the money, the Ugreen 145 watt 25,000 milliamp laptop portable charger, currently $100 on Amazon. Though as I write, there's lower prices with bundled USB-C cables and Ugreen's own at Ugreen's own website, and the link is in the show notes. In February 2014, I bought a 13-inch MacBook Pro. It was almost exclusively and intensely on battery power. On most use days, its battery would drain and have to be recharged. Its battery is rated at 1,000 cycles. At the rate these cycles were being consumed, I estimated they would be used up in 18 months after purchase. To avoid burning through the MacBook's battery, I bought two power bank batteries, bigger, much heavier, and less capable than the Ugreen above, but still able to provide 100% of the MacBook's power needs for the hours. Together, they weighed more than the laptop, but added a lot of mobility. Today, more than 10 years after purchase, the MacBook's charge cycle count is only 492, a low number I attribute to running it on power banks instead of draining the internal battery once or more daily. Disclaimer, it hasn't been used much since I acquired my first Linux laptop, and even less since it's now orphaned by Apple without security updates and is unsafe to connect to a network or the internet. Here's a quote from the XDA developers. You may already know this, but batteries tend to wear down over time. As you use them and charge them back up, batteries will lose their original design capacity. Of course, nothing simple, as the article continues. While charging and discharging a battery is the fastest way to wear it down, keeping a battery fully charged at 100% constantly will also cause faster wear. XDA wraps up with some helpful information for how to extend life for a variety of laptop brands. Here's specifics for Larry's HP. HP has two methods for limiting the battery charge on its laptops: adaptive battery optimizer and battery care function. Both of these are found in the BIOS and they're mutually exclusive. Adaptive battery optimizer automatically adapts the battery charging behavior based on your usage patterns, while battery care functions gives you a more of a hard limiter. And the link to all this is in the show notes. The ability to control these settings in BIOS is great for Linux users. Unfortunately, what's available for my LG Gram is a Windows-only utility. My alternative to is TLP, the Linux command line tool designed to increase battery life. It is said to work out of the box without configuration, and I need to give it a try on the Gram. The TLP-UI is a GUI, or graphic user interface, to TLP. It's available as a flat pack. Both TLP and TLP-UI are offered in Linux Mint software repository and are likely available in other distros too. P.S. Good news. With hope for Larry's Dragonfly, everything on the Gram now works as it should with Mint 22 and its 6.8 kernel. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for all that. And unfortunately, my Dragonfly still has problems, even though I'm running the 6.10 kernel at this point, but thanks for looking out. As well, TLP, I've been familiar with for a while, and I discovered TLP UI recently. Now that I have the HP, I have actually used the settings in the BIOS, and that seems to work quite well. So again, thanks for that. Thanks for all the information. I'm sure someone who has an HP computer will benefit from that. And even people with an LG, whether it's the Gram or something else, will benefit as well. And of course, all that's available to any Linux user.
I didn't know about that. I learned something. It's awesome.
Yeah. All right, George from Tulsa continues. Actually, it's a separate feedback also on 460. This one entitled UTM Virtual Machine. I think Bill may have been somewhat confused about my reference to running Debian 12 in a UTM virtual machine on an M2 Mac as he focused on Asahi Linux, a project that is attempting to get past Apple's hardware restrictions that keeps users from installing Linux on an M series Mac. Asahi is very much a work in progress, but by a small town team of dedicated developers. As to my UTM Debian virtual machine, I'm sad to report that after I upgraded Linux Mint from 21.3 to 22, the Debian install in my UTM VM stopped functioning, perhaps as it was a change in Mint and its Ubuntu base, or perhaps it was because I hadn't bought the UTM app from Apple's Mac App Store, which provides automatic updates unlike the direct download, which doesn't. Currently, I have a NUC form factor Ryzen 7 on my desk stacked under my M2 Mini. By adding a KVM switch, I am now able to choose which system to run without the hassle of keeping a VM functional. From my earliest days trying to run Linux on a Mac in a Parallels VM, Linux has always run best on dedicated hardware, so I'll not be experimenting more with the UTM VM at this time. NUC stacked underneath an M2 Mini. There's got to be some heat going on there.
Maybe a little bit. I'm confused, sometimes confused about a lot of stuff, but I think the little Mac Mini is passively cooled, so it doesn't have a fan. I don't think it does, but I bet that Nook does. So
yeah. Okay, moving on. Reed provides an update on his Lemur Pro. We were just talking about that. Dear Larry and Bill, thanks so much for Going Linux. I never miss it. I have been enjoying the episodes about networking. I got Network Plus a couple of decades ago, and about 7 years ago, I put together the simple network for our company satellite office. IT was, quote, too busy, and I thought I could handle it. The side benefit is that I now have administrative privileges for the stuff I don't have to rely on IT for much anymore, so I felt sort of okay in basic networking until I listened to the last couple of episodes. Now I realize how much has gotten fuzzy in my aging brain. Thanks for covering stuff like that, or understanding even of things you think you already know something about is improved when you hear someone else discussing it with other points of view and tips from your wide audience. Going Linux is an engaging, accessible resource for us non-experts. I thought you might like a brief update on my experience with the System 76 Lemur Pro I was so excited to get a few months back. For background, I have usually had ThinkPads with one Dell and one Acer in the mix over the years, and a Microsoft Surface the company gave me. My wife has an M1 MacBook Air, which I maintain and use occasionally. I love ThinkPads for their keyboards and pointing stick. I have admired the premium feel and smoothness of the MacBook, while the Surface, Dell, and Acer didn't leave much of a mark. So that is my frame of reference. Someone with different experience might have a different impression. Your mileage may vary, as they say. Anyway, keyboard. This is back on the Lemur Pro. I've gotten used to it and like it. It is crisp and it has a firm feel, but doesn't have the key travel and nicer feel of the ThinkPad keyboards I've liked. It's just as good or better, though, than the one on my wife's MacBook. I type accurately on it. Touchpad. It's great for a touchpad, more responsive to me than the one on the MacBook. But that's not saying much if you like the ThinkPad pointing stick better. I know people love them or hate them. I love them, but I knew what I was getting into when I bought the Lemur. I've made my peace with it. Screen. Still very happy with it, though I don't do demanding photo work. Very bright and clear with muted reflections in bright areas. Battery life. Still excellent, although I notice it seldom shows full charge, usually 99% tops. It maintains its charge during sleep, so mostly I just close the lid so it's almost instantly ready next time I want it. I find I'm charging it every couple of days, but I haven't run a battery life test yet. We'll try to do that. Heat and fan use. One thing I'd read before I bought the Lemur Pro was that sometimes fan noise got very loud. Mine has done that briefly during updates, but stops as soon as the update's complete. I've noticed that now we've had a couple of firmware updates. Fan noise during updates is less than it was originally. I've included a screenshot of P sensor taken during a recent update. The temp spikes to over 100 degrees, but the fan brings it right down again. I don't know if this is a characteristic of the Intel Ultra 7 chip or something to do with the slim and light chassis not providing ideal cooling, but during normal use I never hear the fan and the machine doesn't get hot on my lap. So this issue hasn't concerned me so far and is encouraging that firmware updates have improved it. Speed. Still runs like a rocket. The sensation of speed is better than my wife's M1 Air, in that the Air feels fast, the Lemur seems instant. Part of that may be the difference in the operating system. Whatever the cause, I'm happy with speed and responsiveness. Overall, I'm still happy and would definitely buy the Lemur Pro again if I had to do it over. Hopefully you'll pardon the long email since this is a new model. I hoped it might be useful. Thank you, Bill and Larry, for your great show. Reed. Well, thanks, Reed. Sounds like you and I are getting similar sort of performance. Me on my Dragonfly and you on your Lemur Pro. As I observed in a previous episode, they seem very, very similar in a lot of ways. Although it's obvious they're not the same computer or the same hardware, the whole idea of thin and light and high performance have peaked there in both of these models. And like I think I've already said, if it weren't for the fact that I got a smoking deal on the Dragonfly, I would have a Lemur myself. By the way, HP no longer makes the Dragonfly what? That I have. And yep, no longer offers it for sale. So, and anybody who wants a 1 kilogram or 2.2 pound thin light laptop that runs screamingly fast, Lemur Pro from System 76 is the one to get.
I think also Framework offers a little lightweight one. I don't think it's as light as the Lemur Pro or yours. Reed, buddy, old pal, you need to let me just go ahead and take care of that Lemur Pro for you, dude. I'll take real good care of it, and I'll test it exclusively, and you'll get it back in a few years. What do you say?
I
can't blame a fella for trying. So, yeah, sounds like it's awesome.
We've got one more email left, Bill, and it's a long one.
I know.
It's a really long one. I think it's like 3 lines long.
So, Jim writes this really long email with feedback about our theme music. Dear Larry and Bill, I like the new intro music, Jim.
Sarcasm abounds in both of us. And actually, we made it through all of our email. So keep writing in and sending in those recordings and voicemails and everything else.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I think I have some waiting in the inbox for the next episode already. So again, thanks to all of our listeners for listening, first of all, and secondly, for providing feedback that all of our other listeners can benefit from. So this is really a big part of our show.
Now, and again, sorry for the drought in new episodes. Life did get in a way, but we'll work to do better. So thanks, everybody, for hanging with us, and we look forward to seeing what you send us.
Yep. So I think that wraps up for our listener feedback episode this time. And our next episode will be on Linux myths, dispelling the 5 top Linux myths that we've run across. Until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes. Take a look at the new design, comment on that if you like. And as well, you can get links to download and subscribe right there on the website. We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.